CNN anchor, chief Washington correspondent, and award-winning journalist Jake Tapper has written a new, very moving and eye-opening account of the devastating sacrifices made during one of America's deadliest battles in Afghanistan. The book is The Outpost, an untold story of American valor, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Jake Tapper to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate
it. Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
What brought you to this story?
You know, it was kind of random. I had been covering the war in Afghanistan as White House correspondent for then I was with ABC News. So I'd been covering the war, but, you know, kind of the coverage that you get from the White House, the troop levels and disputes between the Pentagon and the White House, nothing really on the ground. And then I was in my son was born on October 2nd, 2009, and I was in the hospital with my wife, with my son, my newborn son, and my daughter. And a day or so later, out of the corner of my eye, I heard about this attack on October 3rd, 2009, on this remote outpost I'd never heard of, Combat Outpost Keating. And it was just a devastating attack on this camp that was in a very vulnerable place. It was at the bottom of three steep mountains, 14 miles from the Pakistan border. And just tragic. It was, and what was so strange about it for me, and poignant for me, was there were 53 U.S. troops at the base that morning, and they were attacked by overwhelming odds, up to 400 Taliban, and eight men were killed, eight Americans. And I was holding my son, my newborn son, hearing about eight other sons taken from this planet, and there was just something poignant in the moment that I don't think I even realized at the time, but it set me on this course to report this book and to find out answers to questions that were in my head at the time, such as, what is it like to face such a devastating attack? Who were these eight men who died? Why was that outpost put in that very vulnerable place?
So this
it just set me on this course to find out the answers to those questions.
The seeds were planted on that day. It was a Pentagon investigation later, obviously, that concluded that there was no reason for Outpost Keating to have been there in the first place. Is that when you started to put the dots together and think that there was a story there?
It just became, I mean, the battle itself was so unbelievable. And when I started making calls and hearing more about the battle, that I knew that there was a book to be written about that, because it was just unsurmountable odds. These men were asked to defend the indefensible, and all eight of the men who were killed that day, all eight of them, to a man, was killed doing something that was selfless, whether it was trying to return fire or deliver ammunition or rescue his buddies stuck in a Humvee or whatever it was. All eight of them was doing something to help somebody else at great risk and ultimately the ultimate cost to their own lives. But then after I started doing some of the research for the book, and I signed a book contract to write about the battle, other troops who had been at that same outpost in previous deployments, 2006, 2007, started reaching out to me. They wanted me to tell about the outpost and what they did and what their buddies who lost their lives were like and what their experiences were. And they wanted those stories told as well. I think that there's a real surfeit, a real lack of stories about our troops and what they're doing over there. Understandably, perhaps the public has grown weary of America's longest war. They don't want to hear anything more. The public has, you know, very limited interest in these stories, which are very sad. But ultimately, you know, a lot of these stories are very inspiring, these men and women do impossible things, and in a way, it's cause for inspiration and celebration. So that's how it became like a much larger project and a much bigger book. It went from beyond the battle to the whole history of the outpost and a way to understand the war by just looking at this little corner of it.
Do you think, and I want to go on to obviously talk about what happened and your investigation of it, but when you say that we become weary of the stories, do you think a lot of that was set up initially from a previous administration, when the war started, of not wanting to tell us a hell of a lot of what was going on?
I think it's fair to say that the Bush and Obama administrations and the Army sometimes get in the way of these stories being told. Sometimes the stories are not positive ones. An outpost being overrun by Taliban and 8 Americans being killed, the highest number of U.S. troops killed in 2009 in Afghanistan, that's not immediately on its face a good news story, nor is it one that the Pentagon necessarily wants to herald and discuss. So that's one. I mean, your larger point about, you know, the cameras being off limits at Dover Air Force Base where the coffins, the caskets come in, that's part of it as well. The respect for sometimes the desire to protect the privacy of these families who are suffering, and right. and the privacy of the troops sometimes gets in the way, I think it's fair to say, of media efforts. But also, I mean, we should be honest in the fact that I think that there is a general trend in media, and obviously there are certainly many, many exceptions to this, but there is a general trend in media to lean towards entertainment media more, which is not to criticize, you know, coverage of cultural stories, you know, culture, film, books, movies. This is certainly legitimate to cover, but I think that there is, you know, when you get into the Kardashians and the Paris Hiltons of the world, it is problematic, I think, and that's, I think that's part of the equation as well.
So realizing that book audiences aren't the same as television audiences, I do have to ask the question, because the book has come out and people have responded to it. It's a bestseller. People want to read the story. So I would assume you have to ask yourself, as a journalist looking into this, saying, well, you know, why couldn't we put this on the nightly news and tell this story in a compelling way and get people to understand what is happening?
That's exactly right. I mean, I think that is one of the lessons that I have learned 6 months ago. The book came out in November, and if 6 months ago somebody had said, Jake Tapper has a 600-page book about Afghanistan coming out, and it's going to be on the New York Times bestseller list for several weeks, a lot of people would have said, that's crazy. And to be honest, you know, it wasn't an easy sell. I mean, God bless Little Brown and Company, my publisher, for putting it together. I think you're generally right. There is an appetite for it, especially now, I think, as we're winding down the war, and I think as a lot of Americans are thinking to themselves, you know, there's a lot of sacrifice that's gone on. I want to know more about these people. I want to know more about what they went through and what their families have gone through. And I've gotten a very positive response from the book. Just as one example, the lieutenant governor of Delaware read the book, and he reached out to me on the Facebook page for the book, which is facebook.com/outpostbook. And he reached out to me, and he was so moved by the stories, because, let's face it, the media has failed in telling enough of these stories. He wanted to do something for some of these troops. So he invited, through me, a bunch of troops to Delaware, not just to attend his inauguration as lieutenant governor, but also to have them speak, to have them tell their stories. And so three of the troops who were at the camp that day, First Sergeant John Hill and two guys not in the military anymore, Cody Floyd and Zach Kappas, they spoke to junior ROTC, and then we had an event in downtown Wilmington where I interviewed them, and it was pretty packed, surprisingly, especially for small wonder state of Delaware. And I think you're right. I think that people do want to hear these stories. And to CNN's credit, that's where I work now, CNN let me interview Clint Romache, who is one of the heroes of the book, who was just awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor by President Obama. And I flew out to North Dakota, I interviewed him, and I called Jeff Zucker, the new president of CNN, and I said that he was really good, it was a really good interview, you should give me an hour to tell the story. And Jeff Zucker said, okay, write the script, and I sent it to him, and he loved it, and he gave me an hour, and we've aired it a few times. So hopefully I'll be doing more of that, but when I was at ABC, I was able to tell some of the stories surrounding the publication of my book. So I think there are reasons to be there, and maybe there is a reason to believe that there's not only an appetite but a willingness by some media platforms to talk about these sacrifices.
So the question that you ask, of course, in the book is, why was it there? And you address that in the book, which brings up the follow-up question of wondering, as we look at this wind-up to the war, of how many other outposts and missions are either underway or that exist that are set up for failure, that are bad news.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole policy component to the book, although, it's not policy heavy, but obviously the two aspects of policy that play into the location of the outpost are, one, they sprinkled a bunch of these small outposts throughout eastern Afghanistan as they were trying to expand into that part of the country. Interestingly enough, of the seven medals of honor that have been awarded to troops who served in Afghanistan, five of them were in these two eastern provinces, Nuristan and Kunar provinces. That's where Clint Romache was, that's where the book takes place. There are many heroics. But in any case, the one question is these small outposts, which they set up because they didn't have a lot of manpower in Afghanistan in 2006. Most of the troops and assets deployed were deployed in Iraq. I believe in 2007, there were literally 20 times the number of troops in Iraq as there were in Afghanistan, which is an astounding figure. So that's one. And then two is this strategy of counterinsurgency, which is trying to win over the support of locals and try to drive out the enemy, the bad guys, by connecting locals with the Afghan government and funding development and projects and trying to show them a better life. And that also comes into play. And one of the things the book illustrates in a story-filled way, and not like a textbook kind of way, is how difficult it is to do that, to win over the locals. But I think you're right that there is this component that I hope that the military is looking at when it comes to these smaller outposts, and also the difficulty of counterinsurgency.
When you look at the story that you tell in this book, do you get a sense that we learn lessons from things like that, or that we are so in the thick of it that it would take so long that everybody will be out of there before we learn that lesson?
It's very difficult to know what kind of lessons we learn. I know what lessons the men on the ground and the women on the ground learn, but for a large part, they're not. Their opinion is not solicited. Zach Coppice, a former specialist who served at Combat Outpost Keating, when I asked him what should the military do differently beyond putting people in indefensible posts, and he said, they should listen to the enlisted men more. And his point is that you have a bunch of officers who do things and they're on a career track that maybe impedes their ability to say, this is just a horrible idea. We should not do this. Or maybe it takes fresh eyes or fresh thinking or whatever, but he just thought that there just isn't enough of that. But one of the other things that I should say is that the colonel and lieutenant colonel in charge of that area of operations in 2009, the last year that the outpost existed, Colonel Randy George and Lieutenant Colonel Brad Brown, they were trying to close the outpost. They thought that it was a ridiculous idea that these outposts, these small outposts, were horribly vulnerable and serving no higher purpose for the war effort. And they tried to close them. It was General McChrystal who would not listen to them because he had these other concerns. He had political considerations he was trying to meet in terms of deferring to what President Karzai of Afghanistan wanted. And also he was involved in a kind of unseemly back and forth with President Obama over troop levels and that sort of thing. And at that point was trying to defer to President Obama, who was engaged in his own review of Afghanistan. So people were aware of the problem. It's just that the people who had the ultimate say didn't take it seriously enough.
You write in the epilogue of the book that in the course of my conversations and interviews for the project, I was told by one recently retired general with experience in Afghanistan that he hoped the book might have an impact on the nation in wars going forward, saying the wars of the 21st century have been outsourced by the American people to our government in D.C. and to our military. With an all-volunteer force, the American people are no more connected to our armed forces than the Roman citizens were to the legionnaires. And now we even pay for wars with tax cuts. So whose war and whose army is it? That's a very sobering sentiment.
It is, and it's from somebody who, if I mentioned his name, you would recognize. It is a concern that we as a country are so disconnected from the people who fight our wars and who suffer from for our wars, the wives and family members, that it's not difficult to fight these wars because the population doesn't feel it. It doesn't feel the pain. So you have this small percentage of unbelievably selfless individuals who join the military for any variety of reasons. Some of them noble, some of them just to, you know, get out from a dead end life that they're living in whatever small town or big city. And a small percentage of people who are family members of them, you know, have the little take-home pay and years away from their spouse, et cetera. And so it's easy for the U.S. to go to tackle two wars at once, or three if you included the global war on terror. Nobody has any skin in the game except for this small percentage of the country. And I think I'm not advocating certainly for a draft or for tax increases or for national service requirement or anything like that. It's not my job, but I just think it's unsustainable for the nation to continue on the path it's on. There was a draft and it was very unpopular during the Vietnam War. You have to think, well, how much longer would the Vietnam War have lasted if there had not been a draft? If the population at large did not have skin in the game. We're lucky that we have all these volunteers, but I wonder how long it can sustain like that.
Circling back to an earlier question as we wrap up, did you feel any challenges in getting the information you wanted in regards to what happened?
Look, I'm a reporter, so I dig, and that's part of. That's part of my job. I wouldn't say that, like, I told the Pentagon I was doing this book and they, you know, gave me a list of names and numbers and
this helped you out.
Here's all the people that screwed up and, you know, these are all the horrible stories that we don't want to tell. But for the most part, once it became clear to the Pentagon and the troops with whom I was interviewing that I was not out to get anybody. The only bad guys in the book are the ones with, you know, guns and RPGs trying to kill Americans. Everybody else is trying to do what they can do. Some bad decisions are made, but everybody else is trying to wage this war. Most of the time, people cooperated. There were some, I would say, beyond the Pentagon and the public affairs officers were of various degrees of competence. Some were incredible and some were impossible. But beyond that, I pursued interviews with the troops on my own. Just through Facebook and through, you know, soldiers giving me their fellow soldiers' phone numbers, et cetera. And there were a lot of skeptics initially. There are a lot of people who didn't want to cooperate with me, but I won them over and ultimately they became invested in the project.
It seems that many of the troops were very invested in the project. They wanted to tell the story.
Their stories have not been told. I mean, the truth is, like, Clint Romichet was just awarded the Medal of Honor, but there was very little coverage of the attack on Combat Outpost Keating when it happened. There were some, but certainly not enough. Most Americans can name more Kardashians than they can name soldiers who have died in the war, or Medal of Honor awardees, recipients. I mean, it's just a fact that these stories are not being told. And this is, you know, this book was my small part in trying to rectify that, and thankfully I had support from CNN, from ABC News, from Little Brown and Company, but ultimately it was on me to to tell the story, and I can't really even in retrospect explain how I did it, except to say that I just became very driven and I felt a real sense of obligation to tell these troop stories, especially after they became invested in the project.
The name of the book is The Outpost, An Untold Story of American Valor. Jake Tapper, a great pleasure. Thank you very much for sharing with us.
It's really been my honor. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Again, the name of the book is The Outpost, An Untold Story of American Valor. The book is published by Little Brown. Jake Tapper is the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.